All right, we're continuing chapter 12 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. He just had his first little lesson, I think, with Professor Lupin. Ravenclaw played Slytherin a week after the start of term. Slytherin won, though narrowly. According to Wood, this was good news for Gryffindor, who would take second place if they beat Ravenclaw also. He therefore increased the number of team practices to 5 a week. This meant that with Lupin's anti-Dementor classes, which in themselves were more draining than 6 Quidditch practices, Harry had just one night a week to do all his homework. Even so, he wasn't showing nearly the strain as much as Hermione, whose immense workload finally seemed to be getting to her. Every night, without fail, Hermione was to be seen in a corner of the common room, several tables spread with books, arithmetic charts, rune dictionaries, diagrams of muggles lifting heavy objects, and file upon file of extensive notes. She barely spoke to anybody and snapped when she was interrupted. "How's she doing it?" Ron muttered to Harry one evening as Harry sat finishing a nasty essay on undetectable potions for Snape. Harry looked up. Hermione was barely visible behind a tottering pile of books.
"Doing what?"
"Getting to all her classes," Ron said. "I heard her talking to Professor Vector, that arithmancy witch, this morning. They were going on about yesterday's lesson, but Hermione can't have been there because she was with us in care of magical creatures. And Ernie McMillan told me she's never missed a Muggle Studies class, but half of them are at the same time as divination, and she's never missed one of them either." Harry didn't have time to fathom the mystery of Hermione's impossible schedule at the moment. By the way, I've always wondered, if she had, so she clearly has this, like, time device, right? Why doesn't she just use it to go back in time and do her homework? Like, presumably she could spend an evening on her homework, go back in time, do more homework, and even go back in time and then sleep a little bit. I mean, oh man, it's so weird. She has this time device. Maybe she's not allowed to use it that way, I guess. I don't know. Anyways, he really needed to get on with Snape's essay. But 2 seconds later, he was interrupted again, this time by Wood.
"Bad news, Harry. I've just been to see Professor McGonagall about the firebolt. She got a bit sharty with me. Told me I got my priorities wrong. Seemed to think I cared more about winning the cup than I do about you staying alive. Just because I told her I didn't care if it threw you off, as long as you caught the snitch first."
Wood shook his head in disbelief.
"Honestly, the way she was yelling at me, you'd think I said something terrible, terrible. Then I asked her how much longer she was going to keep it.
He screwed up his face and imitated Professor McGonagall's severe voice.
"As long as necessary, Wood. I reckon it's time you ordered a new broom, Harry."
Oh, sorry. Not that voice. Okay, that was weird. I was trying to do Wood's imitation of McGonagall's voice, and that was very strange. So, anyways, back to Wood. Okay, here's Wood.
"I reckon it's time you ordered a new broom, Harry. There's an order form at the back of Witch Broomstick. You could get a Nimbus 2001, like Malfoy's got."
"I'm not buying anything Malfoy thinks is good," said Harry flatly. By the way, I remember when I first read this, and every other time that I read this, I always thought that was the stupidest thing Harry could possibly say. Because, like, a broom's a broom, right? You know, whether or not Malfoy thinks it's good or not, it's good independent of Malfoy. Anyways, Harry's just being stupid. January faded imperceptibly into February, with no change in the bitterly cold weather. The match against Ravenclaw was drawing nearer and nearer, but Harry still hadn't ordered a new broom. He was now asking Professor McGonagall for news of the firebolt after every transfiguration lesson, Ron standing hopefully at his shoulder, and Hermione rushing past with her face averted.
"No, Potter, you can't have it back yet," said Professor McGonagall,
the 12th time it's happened, before he'd even opened his mouth. "We've checked for the usual curses, but Professor Flitwick believes the broom might be carrying the hurling hex. I shall tell you once we've finished checking it. Now please stop badgering me." To make matters even worse, Harry's anti-Dementor lessons were not going nearly as well as he had hoped. Several sessions on, he was able to produce an indistinct, silvery shadow every time the Bogart Dementor approached him, but his Patronus was too feeble to drive the Dementor away. All it did was hover like a semi-transparent cloud, draining Harry of energy as he fought to keep it alive. Harry felt angry with himself, guilty about his secret desire to hear his parents' voices again. "You're expecting too much of yourself," said Professor Lupin, sternly, in their fourth week of practice. "For a 13-year-old wizard, even an indistinct Patronus is a huge achievement. You aren't passing out anymore, are you?" "I thought a Patronus would charge the Dementors down or something," said Harry dispiritedly. "Make them disappear." "A true Patronus does do that," said Lupin. "But you've achieved a great deal in a very short space of time. If the Dementors put in an appearance at your next Quidditch match, you'll be able to keep them at bay long enough to get back to the ground." "You said it's harder if there are loads of them," said Harry. "I have complete confidence in you," said Lupin. "Here, you've earned a drink, something from the Three Broomsticks. You won't have tried it before." He pulled two bottles out of his briefcase. "Butterbeer," said Harry, without thinking. "Yeah, I like that stuff." Lupin raised an eyebrow. "Oh, Ron and Hermione brought me back some from Hogsmeade." "I see," said Lupin, though he still looked very suspicious. "Well, let's drink to a Gryffindor victory against Ravenclaw. Not that I'm supposed to take sides as a teacher," he added hastily. They drank the butterbeer in silence, until Harry voiced something he'd been wondering for a while. "What's under a Dementor's hood?" Professor Lupin lowered his bottle thoughtfully. "Well, the only people who really know are in no condition to tell us. You see, the Dementor lowers its hood only to use its last and worst weapon." "What's that?" Harry asked. "They call it the Dementor's Kiss," said Lupin with a slightly twisted smile. "It's what Dementors do to those they wish to destroy utterly. I suppose there must be some kind of mouth under there because they clamp their jaws on the mouth of the victim and they suck the soul out." Harry accidentally spat out a bit of butterbeer. "What? They kill?" "Oh no," said Lupin, "much worse than that. You can exist without your soul, you know, as long as your brain and heart are still working. But you'll have no sense of self anymore, no memory, no anything. There's no chance at all of recovery. You just exist as an empty shell, and your soul is gone forever, lost." Lupin drank a little more butterbeer and then said, "It's the fate that awaits Sirius Black. It was in the Daily Prophet this morning. The Ministry have given the Dementors permission to perform it if they find him." Harry sat stunned for a moment at the idea of someone having their soul sucked out through their mouth. But then he thought of Black. "He deserves it," he said suddenly. "You think so?" said Lupin lightly. "Do you really think anyone deserves that?" "Yes," said Harry defiantly. "For some things." He would have liked to have told Lupin about the conversation he'd overheard about Black and the Three Broomsticks, about Black betraying his mother and father, but it would have involved revealing that he'd gone to Hogsmeade without permission, and he knew Lupin wouldn't be impressed by that. So he finished his butterbeer, thanked Lupin, and left the History of Magic classroom. Harry half wished that he hadn't asked what was under a Dementor's hood. The answer had been so horrible, and he was so lost in unpleasant thoughts of whatever it would feel like to have your soul sucked out that he was walking headlong to Professor McGonagall halfway up the stairs. "Do watch where you're going, Potter." "Sorry, Professor." "Well, I've just been looking for you in the Gryffindor common room." "Here it is. We've done everything we could think of, and there doesn't seem to be anything wrong with it at all. You've got a very good friend somewhere, Potter." Harry's jaw dropped. She was holding out his firebolt, and it looked as magnificent as ever. "I can have it back?" Harry said weakly. "Seriously?" "Seriously," said Professor McGonagall, and she was actually smiling. "I dare say you'll need to get the feel of it before Saturday's match, won't you? And Potter, do try and win, won't you? Or we'll be out of the running for the 8th year in a row, as Professor Snape was kind enough to remind me only last night." Speechless, Harry carried the firebolt back upstairs toward Gryffindor Tower. As he turned a corner, he saw Ron dashing toward him, grinning ear from ear.
She gave it to you. Excellent. Listen, can I still have a go on it tomorrow?
Yeah, anything, said Harry, his heart lighter than it had been in a month.
You know what? We should make up with Hermione. She was only trying to help.
Yeah, all right, said Ron. She's in the common room now, working for a change. They turned into the corridor to Gryffindor Tower and saw Neville Longbottom pleading with Sir Cadogan, who seemed to be refusing him entrance.
I wrote them down, Neville was saying tearfully, but I must have dropped them somewhere.
A likely tale, roared Sir Cadogan.
Then, spotting Harry and Ron,
good evening, my fine young yeoman. Come, clap this loon in irons. He's trying to force entry to the chambers within.
Oh, shut up, said Ron, as he and Harry drew level with Neville.
I've lost the passwords, Neville told him miserably. I made him tell me what passwords he was going to use this week because he keeps changing them. Now I don't know what I've done with them.
Oddsabodkins, said Harry to Sir Cadogan, who looked extremely disappointed, and reluctantly swung forward to let them through into the common room. There was a sudden, excited murmur as every head turned, and the next moment Harry was surrounded by people exclaiming over his firebolt.
Where'd you get it, Harry?
Will you let me have a go?
Have you ridden it yet, Harry?
Ravenclaw have no chance. They're all on clean sweep sevens.
Can I just hold it, Harry?
After 10 minutes or so, during which the firebolt was passed around and admired from every angle, the crowd dispersed, and Harry and Ron had a clear view of Hermione, the only person who hadn't rushed over to them, bent over her work and carefully avoiding their eyes. Harry and Ron approached the table at last, and she looked up.
"We got it back," said Harry, grinning at her and holding up the firebolt.
"See, Hermione, there wasn't anything wrong with it," said Ron.
"Well, there might have been," said Hermione. "I mean, at least you now know that it's safe."
"Yeah, I suppose so," said Harry. "I'd better put it upstairs."
"I'll take it," said Ron eerily. "I've got to give Scabbers his rat tonic."
He took the firebolt and, holding it as if it were made of glass, carried it away up the boys' staircase.
"Can I sit down?" Harry asked Hermione.
"I suppose so," said Hermione, moving a great stack of parchments off a chair. Harry looked around at the cluttered table, at the long arithmetic essay on which ink was still glistening, and the even longer Muggle Studies essay, explain why Muggles need electricity, and at the rune translation Hermione was now poring over.
"How are you getting through all this stuff?" Harry asked her.
"Oh, well, you know, working hard," said Hermione. Close up, Harry saw that she was almost as tired as Lupin.
"Why don't you just drop a couple of subjects?" Harry asked, watching her lift books as she searched for her rune dictionary.
"I couldn't do that," said Hermione, looking scandalized.
"Arithmetic looks terrible," said Harry, picking up a very complicated-looking number chart.
"Oh, no, it's wonderful," said Hermione earnestly. "It's my favorite subject. It's..."
But exactly what was wonderful about arithmetic, Harry never found out. At that precise moment, a strangled yell echoed down the boys' staircase. The whole common room fell silent, staring, petrified at the entrance. Then came hurried footsteps, growing louder and louder. And then Ron came leaping into view, dangling with him a bedsheet.
"Look!" he bellowed, striding over to Hermione's table.
"Look!" he yelled, shaking the sheets in her face.
"Ron, what?"
"Scabbers! Look! Scabbers!"
Hermione was leaning away from Ron, looking utterly bewildered. Harry looked down at the sheet Ron was holding. There was something red on it. Something that looked horribly like...
"Blood!" Ron yelled into the stunned silence. "He's gone! Do you know what was on the floor?"
"No," said Hermione in a trembling voice.
Ron threw something down onto Hermione's rune translation.
Harry and Hermione leaned forward. Lying on top of the weird, spiky shapes were several long, ginger cat hairs. And that's the end of chapter 12.
And next we'll read chapter 13 called Gryffindor versus Ravenclaw.
I hope you like that, my kitty. And I will call you now and talk to you because I love you so much. And I had a really great weekend with you, and you look absolutely stunning in your Halloween costume, and it was very impressive that you put the whole thing together in just a few hours. And I can't wait to see you, because I'll see you in just a few days, just 2 days. So I guess 3 days. I love you so much, my kitten. You're such a sweet girl. Good night, boo.